the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk on this Wednesday afternoon with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. It is a very interesting day in the fact that there is the sadness with the loss of a true Tennessee legend and state treasure in John Majors. But Jimmy Hyams, at the same time, a lot of smiles. You can't help but think of so many different big memories, whether it was a chance to interact and perhaps laugh out loud with Coach Major sitting right next to him, or just appreciate having the opportunity to hear him spin another tale as he had such a fantastic memory throughout his entire life. But Tennessee today says goodbye and suffers the loss of one of its best ever, number 45, but it's also a day to celebrate the life of a true Tennessee Volunteer.
Well, you're right, and I'm going to miss him. You're going to miss him. The Tennessee family's going to miss him. The Vol Nation is going to miss him. I got a kick out of him. I love covering him when he was Tennessee's football coach. I found him to be very forthright and honest to deal with. And then in later years, as we got closer with him, he joined us on a show on a weekly basis during football season for about 4 years. We certainly enjoyed that. And some of the tales that he would tell, it was just a lot of fun to be around. He had a great sense of humor. So many different stories that were just hilarious to me about him. And he would he didn't mind sticking a barb in you, but he could take one. And I appreciated that about him. Johnny had a lot of interest. He was interested in the symphony. He read a lot. He loved to travel. He liked doing different things. He loved history. And when he started the Majay Luncheons, which were on pretty much a monthly basis, once he came back to Tennessee from Pittsburgh, he would have a variety of guests. Yes, he might have had some sports guests, but he would have somebody that was a major or a colonel, somebody that could talk about the war, somebody that could talk about the symphony, somebody that could talk about a variety of history events. And he mixed it up quite a bit, and I thought that made him a very interesting and intriguing character. But my goodness, when you mention the major's name, isn't that synonymous with Tennessee football?
It is. And number five, very special. And I know that Tennessee is not really in the business of setting aside numbers. They have on a couple of very special occasions. But if they don't want to set it aside, which I think would be a tremendous honor, then I think what they should do is turn it into a team honor. That it becomes perhaps something that you present to somebody at the start of a season. And I also know there are limitations as to who can actually wear that number, but would like to see Tennessee do something to celebrate that number. I know they posted it. They have it in the stadium, but I just think it would be neat to see them do something with number 45, if indeed they would consider retiring the number, because while many have worn it since John Majors wore it, I just think that would be a really significant honor.
I do too, and I would like to see that as well. I know that he was such a great player, and there are some folks who don't realize how good he was. I mean, this guy was a two-time All-American. He was a runner-up for the Heisman Trophy to Paul Hornung of Notre Dame, and Hornung, the only player from a team with a losing record to ever win the Heisman Trophy. General Nealon called Majors the greatest single-wing tailback in Tennessee history. He went into the College Football Hall of Fame as a player in 1987. I would argue he deserved to go in as a coach, because they've got what I think is a silly criteria that if you didn't win over 60% of your games, you can't go in. Well, the only reason he dipped below 60% was when he went back to Pittsburgh for 4 years after his firing at Tennessee. And so, but if you look at the rebuilding he did at Iowa State, at Pitt, at Tennessee, you go to Iowa State and you get them to their first bowl ever. You go to Pitt and you win the national championship 4 years after I think they were winless. It took him a while to get Tennessee straightened out, but in 85, 89, and 90, he won the SEC championship. And I thought he was a tremendous coach. So also, he coached 33. I mean, he had 33 people on his staff who later became head coaches, and he attributed that to teaching. He said his father was a teacher. He was a teacher. That's what coaches do. They teach. Could it be tough on the players? Yes. Could it be tough on his assistants? Yes. I remember one time talking to him about that I thought he was a little bit rough on some assistants, and he told me, I will not apologize for demanding excellence. But you know what he also said? There were a couple of assistant coaches I was too harsh on, and I shouldn't have done that, and I was wrong. So he could look back at that and see. But he was very demanding. I think his attention to detail, John, is what helped set him apart also. He was very detailed about whether the offensive lineman took the right step, if the receiver ran the right route, if a defensive back turned his hips the proper way. And playing both ways probably contributed to his vast knowledge of football.
Oh, very much so. Love the fact that he shared what he with us, how he liked to approach open dates, and that was to take a look at everybody on both sides of the ball. He said you can't make trades, you don't have free agency, so why not, when you have that opportunity to focus on yourself, take a look at some of the folks that aren't competing with what is their position group necessarily or getting a ton of playing time, and see if they can't help you on the other side of the football or at another position on the same side. So just to look at how hard he worked, was always anxious to see if he couldn't do something to improve his team. And so Jimmy wasn't bashful about switching guys around, and also wasn't bashful about making changes without waiting to the end of the season to do so if he felt he needed to make a change on his staff.
Well, he did it in 1988. He felt like the defense had gotten away from Ken Donahue, who was a great defensive coordinator. And so he made the change, and Doug Matthews took over as the defensive coordinator. The next game, they lose a well-fought game against Alabama. Then they won the last five. That set the tone for 1989 when Tennessee went 11-1 and won the SEC, and then for 1990 when Tennessee won it again. But that was a tough decision he had to make. It was one that he felt like he had to for the betterment of the team. It certainly worked out. But you're right about if it's not working, make a change. Goes back to that definition of an insanity, right?
Yes.
But he was I thought he was really good at that. I thought he was a good job at evaluating talent, putting together game plans, the strategy that was involved. I thought he was a really good game manager during the course of a contest, making the right decisions. So I just had a lot of respect for him, as I know you did, and got real close to him in the later years when he was doing the show with us. We had an opportunity to play golf a few times, and every now and then just call and talk to each other, see how you're doing. And so I'm going to miss him, as I know a lot of people are. He was certainly a Tennessee treasure.
Very much so. And so we have a lot coming your way today. Look forward to being joined by so many. We have VFL's David Moon. He's going to join us in the next segment. We have Johnny's brother, Bobby Majors. He'll be along at 3:35. We'll check in with our good friend Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News at 4:05. Steve Early, Vice President, General Manager of the Vol Network. He'll be along at 4:35. Mike Keith, Vol Network alum, at 5:05. Charles Davis, VFL, at 5:35. Former Tennessee assistant, now Duke head coach, David Cutcliffe at 6:15. And former Tennessee co-captain, all-SEC offensive lineman, Mike Stoll at 6:35. So there is all that and more today, a full afternoon on Sports Talk.
Yeah, and I've actually had some players reach out and say, hey, I'd love to come on and talk about Coach Majors. That's how much respect he commanded. We'll get to what few news and notes we have. And that's brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. Of course, the major news is John Majors passing away. Troy Hale, a former Tennessee player, wide receiver, he's got Buckethead Tavern, which is out on Ray Mears Boulevard. He put up a sign, Coach Majors, we are forever grateful. And I think that speaks for a lot of people, a lot of posts on Twitter, a lot of posts everywhere about Coach Majors. And you know this, because, John, we would have these remotes with him, and he would hang around and sign autographs for as long as people came. And there were a lot of people that would come by that wanted to get his autograph. And he was very obliging, very gracious, and very grateful for the people that that remembered him in such a fond way. I thought that was a nice gesture on his part.
Very much so. And Brian Rice clears up, and sure do appreciate him chiming in, that Tennessee hasn't handed out 45 since A.J. Johnson. And Brian says it was understood the honor in 2012 to be formal retirement of the number. He said that AJ was just allowed to finish his career in it. So
yeah,
that is good to know.
Yeah, and I remember that now that that's been mentioned. But I know that some schools take a particular number, and if you're an exceptional person, they allow you to wear that. I don't know if that's something that Tennessee would consider or not. Not many other notes out there. We've been focused so much on the John Major situation. But just a couple things. The Tennessee Sports Writers Association has named their Women's Basketball Coach of the Year, Union University's Mark Campbell. He won the Gulf South Conference title this 6 and 8 years. He went 26-5, 17-3 in conference play. His overall record in 21 years, 639-99. And UT Martin's Chelsea Perry was the State Player of the Year, 23.1 points, 7.9 rebounds, 2.7 blocks. She shared the team shared the Ohio Valley Conference title, and she was a fourth All-American in program history. And the NBA has agreed to 22 teams being invited to Orlando, 13 from the West Conference, 9 from the East. Those that are look to be in the playoffs in the West, plus New Orleans, Portland, Phoenix, San Antonio, and Sacramento trying to play their way into the playoffs. And in the East, they invited Washington, which was the only non-playoff team as of this moment. 8 regular season games would be played, and then there would be a play-in for the 8 seeds. That will take place July 31 to October the 12th. They'll vote on that tomorrow. And then the first-ever Basketball Hall of Fame shootout will be in Charlotte. That's November the 13th. You'll have Virginia versus Temple, Virginia Tech versus Davidson, ECU versus Liberty. So that's a basketball note that's out there. And when we do come back, we're going to be joined by David Moon. David Moon, a former Tennessee football player, very, very close to the Majors family. We look forward to getting his insight and to talking about Coach Majors.
He joins us next on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
It has to be a real big woman.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And, Jimmy, we look forward to a number of special guests joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And we start with a VFL and longtime friend of the program.
Yeah, David Moon, a great guy. He was a former offensive lineman at the University of Tennessee. We've been friends for many years. And David was very, very close to John Majors and his family. David, thank you for joining us.
Jimmy, I wished it was under different circumstances.
Well, me too. I know you were very close to Coach Majors, and just talk about what it was like to play for him and then what it was like to befriend him after you were a player for him.
Those two experiences couldn't be any different. you know what? On the surface, they couldn't be any different, but you know what? At the core, they were very, very similar. Most of it has to do with maturation. You know, playing for him, I came in 81, and that group, that guys of that era, remember, college football coaches were idols. You know, that was the era of Shug Jordan and Bear Bryant and Johnny Majors, and just on the heels of many others. And so, you know, guys had a sense of awe and respect for the guys, the men they came in to play for. And the head coaches knew that. And so, you know, Coach Majors, as a head football coach, was demanding. You're going to hear that over and over again. He was meticulous. He did not suffer fools very gladly. As I got to know him as an adult, he still had all those same traits, but what I saw as an adult was a childlike sense of humor that you never saw. I only saw little glimpses of it as a player, just little bitty glimpses occasionally. And then something, you never realize this as a player. You never think that your coaches are actual human beings. You just think they're coaches. And you think they live on the practice field or in a film room, and you don't really realize, they have a house and they have a wife and they have things that they do. And so, you know, John Majors, the man, was so much more diverse than a lot of football coaches I know. You know, he grew up here in the South. His father, you can just look at photos of Coach Shirley Majors and only imagine the strictness of the environment in which those boys and that one daughter grew up. And yet John Majors was, as an adult, was an environmentalist. He was a lifelong Democrat, although he never he only began publicly supporting candidates later in his life, I guess when he figured it didn't matter because he wasn't going to get be asked to have another head football coaching job when he was 80. He loved the symphony. He loved museums. When he would travel somewhere, Mary Lynn would go to these flower shows. And they would be in a new town someplace, and he would have done hours of pre-work to prepare to know if there were museums that were in that area, and if not, what were the historical sites he could go see. Just really, really well-rounded.
What's interesting is I remember when I was covering him and he was Tennessee's coach, and something had come up, and I said, Coach, I need to call you tonight after practice. And he said, well, I'm going to the symphony. You can call me after I go to the symphony. I said, you're going where? He said, the symphony. I'm getting culture. So I, that's when I first learned about his diverse interests.
Yeah. He read the New York Times hard copy version every day, cover to cover. It was not uncommon for him to call and want to have lunch or something. And he would have maybe four pages of handwritten notes that he had taken while reading the New York Times about topics he wanted to discuss. And if he wanted to discuss them, by God, you discuss them.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, David, and it's great to catch up with you. I don't think there's any question that if you broached a subject with Coach Majors, one, you were going to be involved in a potentially lengthy conversation, and you weren't going to be spared feelings if he was either very enthusiastic or perhaps opposed.
Yeah, it was interesting in the beginning of quarantine and pandemic. He was one of the first guys. Coach Fulmer did this. Coach Majors did this. He, Coach Majors read a bedtime story, okay? And so he did a video where he read this bedtime story, and then he told some stories around the little book that he read, and it was broadcast out, and people watched it. Well, the bedtime story was 7 minutes. The broadcast was 40 minutes. I don't know how many 8-year-olds lasted to hear Uncle John go through the 1948 game against Shelbyville, but if you ask him a question, you did get an answer. Absolutely.
Right. And chances are you would also perhaps be introduced to a history lesson about the Huntland Hornets.
Let me tell you something that always has amazed me over the past couple of decades is the fact that he, some people can walk into a room full of others, and they'll walk around, and at the end of the night, everybody that was in that room will go, you know what, Jimmy Himes, John Wilkerson came up to me and spoke to me tonight. I really enjoyed meeting that guy. So there are those types of people. And then there are guys like John Majors who, when they walk in the room, he becomes the center of the room. The room comes to him. And I don't mean that he carried a sense. There wasn't a sense of arrogance. There was just a sense of awestruck. There was a star factor with him. You know, I saw him do an autograph signing up on Market Square one day several years ago, and I kind of felt bad. I was thinking, God, he's going to go up there. They're selling these T-shirts. You know, what happens if nobody's there? It's at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday in Market Square. So I called a bunch of buddies, and we're going to meet up there to make sure that at least there are some people there to get his autograph and buy some T-shirts. And we get up there about 10:45, and there are 200 people in line, some of whom weren't born when he finished coaching. I mean, just an amazing draw across multiple eras of football people and of Tennessee people.
David, even when we had him on for a number of years as a weekly guest in the fall, it was sort of difficult working around his schedule because he'd say, well, I'll have to do it at this time because I'm going to Iowa State for something, or I'm going to Pitt for something, or I'm going to Duke for something, or I'm going to some other school for something. He was still doing a lot of traveling in recent years, wasn't he?
He was constantly traveling. He traveled because he continued to maintain these relationships with coaches all across the country. A lot of people don't know this, but he was the president of this the Nike Coach of the Year football clinics, and so they, you know, he had these football clinics all around the country, and he would either speak at the clinics or at least be visible there, and so he continued to do those things. And so not only would he be traveling, but it was not uncommon for him to return phone calls as he's walking through an airport. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't return phone calls when I'm walking through an airport. But that was the kind of schedule that Coach Majors kept. You know, you just didn't waste any minute. He lived 85 years, and he probably crammed 170 years worth of experiences into it.
That's well said.
Yeah. The last time I talked to him, I happened to call him on his birthday, David, and one of the things he told me was, he said, well, I had a birthday today, I'm 85. He said, I never thought I'd live to be 60. So I think that goes back to what you're talking about. He crammed a lot of living into a shorter period of time.
You know, and he was, he didn't just preach discipline. He lived it. You know, mm-hmm. This is 2020. Today, and in you know, so it was what 28 years ago he had really serious heart surgery.
Yeah,
you know, he had a heart attack and bypass, and you know, people don't know it, but he had it again afterwards. And you know what, that guy, when the doctor told him that you need to exercise every day, he exercised every day.
Yeah,
and he changed the way he ate. And you know, so it's a great sense of optimism for people who have medical issues, you know, particularly heart patients, that if you'll do what your doctors say, it doesn't have to be the end of something. When my father had a heart attack in 1994 or five, so 2 or 3 years after Coach Major's heart surgery, and I asked Coach Majors if he would send my dad a note or reach out to him in some fashion. And so he sent my father a handwritten note, apparently. Well, let me tell you what I found. When my father died 2 or 3 years later, he did not do what the doctor said. I found this ongoing pen pal relationship between my father and Coach Majors. I mean, my father never wrote me a note. But he and John Majors exchanged these letters about a lot of really interesting things.
Wow, good story. Hey, David, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I know it's a big loss for you. It's a big loss for the Tennessee family as well.
Y'all have a good afternoon.
Thank you, David.
You too, David.
David Moon, former Tennessee offensive lineman, played for John Majors, and David Moon struck up a great relationship with Coach Majors. We appreciate David taking the time to visit with us about Coach Majors.
We very much do. We'll get a break and be back with more. Jimmy, when we return, we will talk with a member of the Majors family.
We'll visit with Bobby Majors. That's John's younger brother. Bobby, a great football player at Tennessee, and certainly looked up to his older brother.
He joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and once again we go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, for a very special guest.
That's exactly right. We're pleased now to be joined by Bobby Majors, the younger brother of John Majors. Bobby, a great football player at the University of Tennessee, as was his brother. Bobby, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Jimmy. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for joining us. I know this has been a tough day for you today. Just talk about some of your fondest memories of your older brother.
Well, you know, it was a lot to remember and a lot to talk about. It was really a great thrill to growing up watching him play at Tennessee and being on the sidelines after the game and kicking the ball around with him and my brother Bill whenever Bill played there. And, you know, it was just a very comforting because I was 5 or 6 years old when he was playing in Knoxville. And it was just a great thing to have your older brother to be a tutor to show you how to kick the ball and how to catch the ball and throw the ball and, you know, just be a supporting factor in your life, in not only in football but also as a human being and doing the right thing and, you know, minding your parents and doing what they said and, you know, just trying to be a good overall person.
Bobby, you were an All-American, as was your brother, and I wonder, do you think you would have become as good a football player as you were without learning from John Majors?
No, absolutely not. You know, I had a lot like I said a while ago, a lot of tutelage from him. I remember when he was assistant coach out of Arkansas, I went out there. I was in the high school, freshman in high school, and, you know, went out there, and he worked with me in the summertime, teaching me how to, you know, because I was kind of sidearming my passing, and he taught me how to throw the ball over my right ear. He said, "You got to get it over your ear, Bob. Don't be sling." He called it, "Don't be slingshotting that pass. You got to bring it over your ear if you want to do it correctly." You know, I mean, I was like one of the players that he was coaching. You know, I wasn't his brother at that point in time because he was teaching me what to do and how to do it.
Bobby, it's fantastic to catch up with you, and I'm just wondering, what was it? What did it mean to you to be the third Majors brother to come to the University of Tennessee?
Well, Jimmy, you know, it's just hard for people to understand what a thrill it is to be a part of this family and the following that our family had at Tennessee, and particularly having two older brothers play there before I and being able to go up there and be fortunate enough to play with a bunch of great guys to help me look good on Saturdays and play for some awfully good coaches. And, you know, just I had a God-given talent that I was very blessed with, and I hope I got the most out of it. At least I think I did. And, you know, I would like to play in the pros a little bit longer, but, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And, but, you know, I had a real good ride, but like I tell everybody whenever they write me a text or talk to me and say, you know, they remember when I played and all this, and that's my response. I had a real good ride, and I'm, you know, very blessed that I was able to be along there for the ride. And, you know, I've just been very fortunate all my life.
What was it like to watch your brother John do what he did in building as many programs as he did? What he did at Iowa State, then at Pitt, and
yeah,
of course, answering the call to come home to Mother Tennessee.
Yeah, it was. You know, John really built Iowa State up from practically nothing, and you know, Pitt as well, and you know, Tennessee was kind of down in the dumps when he came back. And nobody in the family really wanted him to come back. We felt like he had a better chance of having more national championships up there at Pitt. And, you know, we just felt like that it would be a better fit for him up there rather than coming back and being at his alma mater. And you know, if he were not to win, you know, how things might turn around like they did when things went south as far as the team and the winning record did. And so, you know, I was very not in favor of him coming back. I wanted him to stay at Pitt. But he did what he did. He's a man of his own right. And, you know, it was a good choice on his part. And, you know, he had no regrets about it.
Our guest, Bobby Majors, younger brother John Majors. Bobby, where did John get that sense of humor of his?
Heck, Jimmy, I didn't know he had one. he had a sense of humor when he was when he was gigging you or he was gigging somebody else, when you gigged him, he didn't have a sense of humor. He took that personally. He got that more from our mother than he did our dad. Even though our dad had a real good sense of humor, but our mother was more flamboyant and more of an outgoing. Our dad was kind of reserved from the standpoint that he didn't really care that much about accolades and being out there and being making sure that he got all the accolades and this sort of stuff. Dad was just, went about his business and did his thing and had some great accomplishments of his own. But, our mother was very flamboyant. She liked the crowd. She liked the people. She liked being in front of people. And John was the same way.
Somebody asked me earlier why I thought he was a great football coach. And I basically tried to boil it down to two things: attention to detail and demanding excellence. Would you agree with that, or do you see other
factors? Yeah, they're pretty well top of the list, Jimmy. You knocked that one on the head right there. That was pretty much the philosophy about his coaching, and which you got that from our daddy, and that's the way our daddy was. They were both very detailed individuals, and I'm telling you, buddy, you didn't do it the right way, you were going to know that you didn't do it the right way, and you were going to continue to do it until you did it the right way. They were very, very tough, very strong-minded. But I think in the long run, I think most of the people that played for John would say that he was fair, even though he was tough. And assistant coaches, I've heard them say that how tough John was, but he was very fair.
Bobby, you mentioned how much fun you had coming up because you were a youngster when he was playing at Tennessee to come up and watch him play and kick the football around afterwards. But what do you remember most about him getting to see him play?
I guess what I remember most was the fact that how quick John was, getting away from people and getting people to miss him. And John was deceptively fast. Our dad was a very fast person, and he got a lot of the quickness and fast speed from our dad. And just watching John call plays and control the offensive and the huddle and keeping everything organized. He was always, because I can remember my older brothers and my sister telling me that when we were raised in Lynchburg, how when he was about 12, 13, 14 years old, the rest of them were younger, obviously. Well, John would have the siblings. This is before I was born. He would have his siblings marching in line, making sure that everybody was in step and this sort. He'd always he'd get on somebody if they got out of step or got out of formation or whatever. I mean, he was that way all his life.
Was it difficult at all to follow in his footsteps at the University of Tennessee, or does that family connection just make it such perhaps the only choice that you were going to consider in terms of where you were going to play college ball?
Well, no, actually, I considered going to Alabama or Georgia, because I looked at both of them very strongly. And I never really looked at it from the standpoint that I was following in their footsteps, even though I knew I was. I knew that I had my own ability, and I knew that I had good ability, and I felt like that I would do well at Tennessee, and unfortunately enough, I was able to accomplish quite a bit up there. And so I really never looked at it, Jim, from the standpoint that I was following their, I had in the back of my mind, when I'm following my brother's footsteps, I got to do this or do that. I knew going up there that I wanted to be good. I wanted to be the best. I didn't care what it took. I wanted to be the best at what I did. And I felt like that I was, particularly my junior year when I had 10 interceptions. I felt like I was the best defensive back in the country that year. And, I went at it 100%, and that was the only way. I was a terrible practice player. I was a sorry practice player. I hated practice Monday through Friday. But when they blew that whistle on Saturday, but I was ready to go.
Well, you would have been hard. That would have been hard for you if your brother was coaching you. He wouldn't have liked that, would he?
Well, no. He, as a matter of fact, he tried to recruit me to come to Iowa State, and I didn't want to play for him. I knew how tough he'd be.
Oh, I don't blame you there. Hey, he had a pretty good rivalry with Penn State when he was at Pitt. And based on what I remember, I don't think Penn State wanted to see any more of Bobby Majors after you played against them.
Well, that was a wonderful day, Jimmy. It was Majors Day that day. That was the only city in eastern Tennessee where the sun came out. And it was overcast and rained everywhere else in the eastern Tennessee. And, I had about 200-something yards returning kickoffs and punts. And it was just one of those glorious days that God provided on the kickoff returns. Heck, I'll never forget that. I can still picture of mine right now, that first kickoff. I mean, that hole was so big. I mean, it was as wide as an 18-wheeler. It was just unbelievable. I've never seen a hole as big as that first kickoff was. It was unbelievable.
Also, I remember him bragging about you. He said that you were the best overall athlete in the family, that you were so good at so many different sports. And I know certainly you were a great football player and a very accomplished golfer. What did that mean for your older brother to say that about you?
Well, it's very humbling because we always, even when Bill and Joe were alive, we all five boys always bragged on each other, on ourselves, at one another, that we were the best of any of them, regardless of what sport it was. But, yeah, it was very, very humbling to hear my brother say that he felt like I was the best athlete of the whole group. It was just one of those things that I just happened to hear again. I'm being redundant, but, I just have the God-given talent that I could play every sport and do it well.
One of the things that really stands out, Bobby, is that your brother had 33 coaches that went on to lead programs of some way, shape, or form, and I guess that comes as no surprise as to not only did he coach players, but also did a nice job working up his assistants, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. Matter of fact, I was talking to someone else this morning about that same fact. I did not know how many he had that went as a head coach, but I knew it was quite a few. And, I think that was one of the big accomplishments in John's career, is the fact of how many head coaches that he produced on his coaching staff.
Bobby, I don't know if you get on social media at all, but there's just been an incredible outpouring of for your brother, prayers, memories, all the great things that he did. It's been really wonderful to watch that on social media, and I know that certainly you're very proud of what your brother was able to accomplish as a player, as a coach, and as a person.
Yeah, no question about it. I do follow it, not heavily, but, I do follow it somewhat, and I've seen a lot of stuff on social media about John today. It's really been nice to see, and, John was just a very special person, and, a lot of people didn't like him, but which is okay. A lot of people did like him because, a lot of people that didn't like him was because he beat their alma mater or whatever. But, unfortunately, sports are that way. You either love someone or you hate them because of who you're rooting for. And he had a good life and a good long life. As a matter of fact, he 85 years old. Our daddy was the oldest major male that ever lived, and he was 60. Daddy was 67 when he died, because all the other major male that we traced back over the years has been in the mid to late 50s. So our percentage has not been very good about having a long lifespan, but John was very, very fortunate to have lived as long as he did.
Well, last time I talked to him was on his birthday, and he told me, he said, "I didn't think I'd live to be 60.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Oh.
Hey, Bobby, I know it's a tough day for you, but thank you so much for joining us. The entire Tennessee Nation mourns the loss of your brother, and I know that the family does and you do, and we certainly thank you for taking the time to visit with us about John Majors. Thank you, Bobby.
Yeah, David, thank you for inviting me on, and God bless you and your listeners, and thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bobby.
Bobby, thank you.
All right. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bobby Majors, younger brother of John Majors, who passed away earlier today at age 85.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. We'll be back to close out this first hour of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The station where winners listen and listeners win. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
They don't have any respect for you. Make them remember you as long as they live, the way you hit, and the way you knock them downfield, and the way we hustle. Attack, 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 always attack.
It's a clip from the Johnny Majors Show with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, as today we remember a true Tennessee legend in John Majors. As a former Tennessee player, former Tennessee coach, Jimmy passed away earlier today.
Yeah, he did, and attack, attack, attack. Boy, I don't know how many times he said that, but that was certainly one of his mantras as a coach. We heard that a lot from him, and certainly it was had an interesting career as a player, as a coach, and gosh, I really just really enjoyed covering him, enjoyed being around him after he was finished with coaching. Just a great personality and a fun guy to be around. And as David Moon and Bobby talked about, he had diverse interests. He had a lot of things going on that he enjoyed, which I thought was neat. But I had not heard the story where Bobby said that Johnny had recruited him to go to Iowa State, and he didn't want to go play for his brother at Iowa State because he knew how hard he'd be on him. I had not heard that story. That was pretty good.
That's an awesome story. Going to have to throw you a big no.
Yeah, I wonder what the Thanksgiving was like at that family when the brother wouldn't go play for the other brother, or how that recruiting pitch went. And what do you think the people at Iowa State are thinking? You can't even get your brother up here to play for you? What?
I think we might be in trouble.
What kind of recruiter are you?
Definitely. My goodness.
And there's so many priceless stories involving John Majors, which he was just such a fun character, and I love hearing those stories. And I typically hear one, I thought I'd heard them all, and then I hear another one, I'm like, man, didn't know about that one. So there's just so many great stories revolving around John Majors.
Yes, and look forward to hearing more throughout the course of the afternoon as we just have a ton of guests lined up. We are going to check in with our good friend Mike DeCourcy, who I guarantee has a Majors memory or two, but we're going to talk some hoops to start next hour.
Yes, we'll visit with Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. We'll get his take on what he thinks about Tennessee. We'll also get his take on the G League and just kind of his outlook for some of the teams in college basketball.
Yeah, so we do have a couple minutes left in this hour, but look forward to catching up with Mike DeCourcy. And then, as I said before, Steve Early of the Vol Network at 4:35, Mike Keith, who had a lot of dealings with Coach Majors as he worked for the Vol Network, as well as the hosting Sports Talk for 9 years, Charles Davis. Can't wait to hear his stories. David Cutcliffe, 6:15, Mike Stoll. So it should be a full afternoon, and there's just no telling when the storytelling will subside.
Yeah, and the thing, one of the great stories to me that was when they named the street after him, Johnny Majors Boulevard. So he goes up on campus and he parks on Johnny Majors Boulevard illegally. And the officer unwittingly gave him a ticket. So Majors comes out there, and he's got a ticket on his car, and he's like, what? Well, somebody took care of that because it was just the irony of John Majors getting a ticket for parking illegally on John Majors Boulevard. I just thought that was pretty classic. But as it turned out, he did not have to pay that parking ticket.
No, and I think there's that should be a standard. If you are on the street that is named after you, you can't get a ticket. It just can't happen.
Yeah. But he didn't seem to pay a whole lot of attention to some of the signs when he was on campus about where you could or couldn't park. So it, I got a kick out of that from his perspective. But he was just such a neat person to be around. His brother talked about whether some people didn't like him. And, yeah, there were some people he beat along the way that he coached against that I could see where that occurred. But I just always had a great relationship, as I know you did as well. And going to miss him, going to miss talking to him, going to miss just being around him and listening, because I'm still there's still some stories I hadn't heard. I'm going to miss hearing even more stories about John Majors.
Well, and it's amazing when you talk to a player like John Majors, who had so much talent. I mean, as talented an individual to play for, lead the program at the University of Tennessee, and he, you could tell he was just so much more excited to talk about teammates. And so I just always appreciated that about him. Now, he also did so much in regards to just the impact that he had on some of his former players, which we've already heard from David Moon and can't wait to hear from others as we move on. But just great storyteller, and also love to hear him tell stories, especially when he would get tickled, because he would get to the point where he was laughing. You almost couldn't understand what he was trying to say, but he had so much fun sharing memories.
Well, he did, and he was a great storyteller. I loved hearing him talk about stuff, and such a great memory, the detail that he could recall during his playing days, during his coaching days, and just about other events in his life. It was really, really fun to hear.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. When we return, hour number two of Sports Talk. We'll start with our friend Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.